It's exhausting trying to prove yourself. It's exhausting fighting. I shouldn't have to fight to be equal. Do you know what I mean? Why am I fighting to be equal? I am equal because I'm made in the image of God.
Welcome to Let's Be Real, a completely honest, entirely practical conversation about how to live our lives with freedom, purpose, and abundance. Popular author and communicator Nicole Yunus brings her 20 years of experience as a counselor, pastor, and coach to a real conversation about the tricky questions and tough decisions in life, and how to find clarity and action no matter what obstacle you may face. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email or voice memo to nicole@nicoleyunus.com. We might feature you on the show. And now here's your host, Nicole Yunus.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Be Real. I am so excited for us to be together. First of all, here in this world, it is Friday and we are still at home. We are still in quarantine, but it is Friday, which means the weekend's coming. And I'm also so excited because I have a great friend and leader today on the show. It is Joe Saxton, everybody. Claps up for Joe.
Hi.
So glad that you are here with us.
Thank you.
I met Joe several years ago at the Catalyst Conference.
Gosh, yeah.
And do you remember that?
I do, yeah. It was quite a while back.
It was strange. I had no car and I had to get to a drugstore. And all of a sudden I found myself in a car with Joe Saxton to go to the drugstore. Like women sometimes need to do.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about that. And, you know, that's a good way to meet someone new.
It is. It's excellent, actually. It's an excellent way. Very valid. We had deep conversations. I'm now suddenly remembering some of the conversations we talked. I remember us talking about IUDs.
I think we probably did. That may have been part
that may
of
have
the
been
conversation.
Part. And because there's someone else in the car asking about it, and then we gave our unsolicited advice. I remember that. It was very good.
I loved every second of it. And I actually think that's one of the ways, like, that's so incredible about a tribe of women is I have sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced this, I have sometimes met someone, a fellow leader that I've admired from afar or whatever, and I will glean more from like a 3-minute interaction or even a text exchange.
Yeah.
And it will really change the trajectory of my life. I think it's incredible how God uses people in your life. And even they might not even remember the moment, but you're like, I remember that moment.
Yeah.
That was a turning point.
Absolutely. I think that happens all the time. I think and it's great.
Well, for those of you who may not be familiar with you, you will be familiar and be loving Joe by the end of this interview. Joe is a author. She's a leadership advocate, leadership coach. She's an international speaker. She is a woman who wears many hats. And I want to talk with Joe today about power and taking back our power, which I think is has a lot of connotations to it, even when it lands in your ears right now, when it comes to feminism and politics and all that. And I just want to put all that aside and talk about the actual inherent nature of our power and what it looks like to be disempowered and to find that strength again. And Joe is a fantastic leader in that area. She's just written a book called Ready to Rise that addresses this very thing. So Joe, welcome.
Thank you.
Just can you let everyone know a little bit about what your life currently looks like in the season that you're in?
I mean, well, I spend a lot of time sitting on this chair. I think like you and everybody else, I think our whole life description and job description is being rewritten as we speak. So I'm spending a lot of time coaching leaders, mainly women leaders at this moment. And they may be in the church, they may be in business. Most of them are Christians, and basically just processing their journey at this stage as we understand a landscape that is leaving, that has left us, and try and make sense of the one ahead. Alongside that, I have two teenage daughters who are doing their schooling online upstairs from me. And so helping them navigate this changing circumstance and how it's redefining and reshaping their friendships and how they rebuild and maintain relationship at this time. My husband is working in another room. And so we're working out, okay, what does date like look like when you can't go anywhere?
And that's fantastic. I told my husband this week, I'm like, you have to come up with a date night. Like, and he was like, I really want to. And yesterday he ran through 18 possible scenarios. He's like, we can't do anything. So we're going to go drive to get takeout and eat it in our car tonight for our date night.
Look, look, don't say that love is gone.
Huh? it's alive and well.
It's alive and well and in cars.
And tell me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well do you feel like your family sort of as a whole is navigating this season?
I would say probably a 7, but there are days when everybody is a 2.
Yeah.
And if it's not all at the same time, that's a wonderful thing. Do you know what I mean? And I think navigating, not in terms of everybody's life is together or everything is working out for us. I think that would be probably a 3 or 4 like everybody else. I mean, there are losses we haven't encountered in terms of the fact that there's nobody we know personally who's passed away, which is not the story for many of my friends. But our family is spread over 3 continents. And so there were visits planned to see elderly parents this year that are no longer happening. So there are those losses as well. But I think I say 7 because I feel like we have the gift of a space that we live in, which we enjoy. We're in a state where they've encouraged people to get exercise and go outside and walk, whilst maintaining all the appropriate boundaries. We're in a place where, I mean, to be honest, the privilege of the school district we're in is one that every kid got a laptop, 4 weeks ago, and so I'm not having to school them. I'm just having to make sure they've checked in with teachers who are still schooling them. And so, do you know what I mean? We have been tooled in a way, some by accident, some by virtue of where we live and the privilege in it, and some by our own interactions that are helping us navigate. There's no arriving. I mean, there's no arriving and there isn't always much journeying. It's just navigating this current surreal, painful, challenging, stretching reality.
Well, I'm going to throw you a curveball because I've been thinking about this, but haven't prepared you for it. I feel like in times like this, when everything is disrupted, what you know to be true becomes even more important to you. What are some of those? And I do think this, I'm sure, relates to your writing. What is it that you're feeling? A couple things that you're so sure are true right now because of the changes that we've experienced.
I think... one thing that God has always been my provider. He's always been my provider and he will again. So I don't necessarily know where it's coming from, but he's always been a provider. I think the other one is that I still feel a call and I'm still called even though the vehicles have changed. So the search is not for a new calling. The search is for the appropriate vehicle for the current landscape. And I think those are the two that, have been hitting home recently. Like, he's been faithful to provide. You're still called. Yeah. So go. And so rather than be kind of like passive and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to wait until you give me another word. It's like, no, the call hasn't changed. You're still called. You're part of what he's doing in the renewal of society and making all things new. You're still called to communicate. So there are plenty of vehicles in which to do that. Just find out the one that you need to get in on and do that. Be nimble enough to do that as soon as you can.
Well, I love that because I love you say that the calling hasn't changed, but the vehicle has changed. And I love to think, I always feel like I'm preaching and teaching that calling can never be contained by one position or one job or one season.
Absolutely.
And this is a time where you can find that again, where you're like, okay, well, if it doesn't look like this, how are other ways that this can be playing out in my life?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think because I was speaking at events, and I don't know how long it will be before that sort of reality is appropriate, frankly. Do you know what I mean? Appropriate and safe and comfortable for us to engage with. And so I think it's just an important reflection for us with our gifts and our talents to say what ones are maybe you're on the back burner slightly, and what ones come to the fore and how to keep on asking the how.
Those are great questions. All right, let's talk a little bit about this idea of power that you've addressed in your book. And I think sometimes, and I think you do this early on in the book where you kind of lay out this dinner where these women are sharing about their experiences. Sometimes we know more about power when we're not living in it. And that helps us get in touch with when it is. So you talk a little bit about what does it look like when you aren't living in your power? And why do you think that women are particularly prone to that?
I think there are a number of things. I think there are systemic realities because one thing I don't think it is to do with gift and potential or cool. Mm-hmm. But I think our realities of how we've been socialized impact us. When I'm in the book, I'm talking about the cost of disempowerment and a number of, and the conversations are ones that I have with women all the time, and I'm sure mm-hmm. you do as well, talking about how women are seen and the labels that can haunt them. So if they're, you know, when a man is strong, it's seen as dynamic. When a woman is strong, is it seen as dynamic? Is it seen as comfortable? Is it, or do the bad words catch up real quickly? You know, mm-hmm. is it seen as threatening? Whereas for a guy, it's seen as assertive. And I'm not saying that guy should not be seen as assertive and that guy should not be seen as dynamic. Absolutely, he should. It's just that there are cultural tropes and messages that are so strong that can cause women to hold back or cause them to be pushed back because power in their within their gender somehow is seen as wrong. And not just as a wrong thing to do, but as though there's something wrong with them.
Have you ever found yourself in that situation trying to shape shift and do it a different way?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I've exhausted myself trying to say things in a nice way. And I think there are lots of layers. For me, as a black woman, I'm 5'9" and would often be in spaces where I was taller than people or as tall as people. And then you put heels on that just because you like heels. And then you're 5'11", 6 foot. And I'm dark and I'm extroverted and not in every environment and not in all environments, but in some environments that in itself was, do you know what I mean? If I'm the first person you've met or of first black woman you've interacted with, first black leader you've interacted with, there was a nuance there. There just was. There was challenges there. So I think there were times when I tried to do certain things to come across as less threatening, where I'd ask questions that I knew the answer to, I'd hide ideas. I'd give other people the ideas so they could use them. So why don't you say this? Or why don't you try this? Or I'd, qualify things or try and package something almost apologetically, so just because I'm like, I'm trying to say this, but I don't want you to be afraid. I'm trying to say this, but I don't want you to feel like I'm trying to grab power. I'm trying to say this because I'm trying to address something, but if the package I come in automatically makes you feel you're being confronted, how do I get past that? And it's exhausting.
Do you think that it's, where's the balance between the humility to say, I want to meet you on your terms. Mm-hmm. So if I'm skilled enough to change mm-hmm. my idea into a question, I can be humble enough. I don't need to have that power my way. Where's the balance between how much of that you're doing and when you're truly in an environment that you're so disempowered that you should leave? Like how's that looked for you?
I mean, and I think it varies because you can almost do the same thing for different reasons. Because there are social skills and there are skills of communication where to confront with a question is a healthy thing. I think the moment you have to ask yourself when you're living a lie. Mm. You have to ask yourself, are you lying here? Are you dumbing yourself down? Because humility is agreeing with what God says about who you are. Are you hiding and calling it humility? Are you finding you're manipulating behind the scenes to not be, in that case, just say it out loud because you can't start calling manipulation holiness. Do you know what I mean? Because that's not a balance, is it? Do you know what I mean? There's nothing balanced in that. Yeah. In trying to scheme behind the scenes to work things to your advantage because you don't want to be seen in a particular way is a really unhealthy way to go about stuff. So I think I found in instances, I've had to learn to show up consistently as I am and allow people's assumptions about me to be their problem. Do you know what I mean? If you're scared of me just because I've walked into a room, there's not actually much I can do about that. Mm-hmm. If I've not said a word, if you're scared of black people, I actually can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. I can't, and I shouldn't actually have to change to make it easier for you because that's about your own bias and your own, do you know what I mean? Those sorts of things. If you're scared of me because I'm strong or because I'm loud or whatever, however, there are certain postures I just want to take as a leader because they're healthy. I always want to be friendly. I always want to be open. I always want to learn from people. I'm always going to ask questions because I want to hear somebody else's point of view. That's just good leadership. Those things are healthy leadership. And so if there's a thing I feel strongly about and I'm like, I don't want people to feel like I'm just shooting off at things, I do offer it as a question. I say, look, feel free to pull this apart. I'm just submitting this idea to you.
Yeah.
And then I'm not taking it personally. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm just here bringing you my heart. I'm not bringing you my heart. I'm bringing you an idea. Throw it away if it's not relevant. So I often use qualifying things, but in when you're getting to know someone and getting to work with someone, saying, look, this is an idea and I kind of feel passionate about it, but honestly, I'm passionate about a lot of things. There are times when I've said to people, don't hear my passion as attachment to this thing.
Yeah.
Because honestly, yeah. I'm passionate about soccer. I'm passionate about TV. I'm passionate about all kinds. Don't assume that this means that I really feel, you know, this is still something for us to robustly pull apart.
Yeah. And I love that's sort of this beautiful mix of confidence and vulnerability, because mm-hmm. you're basically coaching people on how to be with me. Now they can take it or leave it. When it comes to that though, and you've been in those environments where you feel like you've had to shapeshift or whatever, you've been disempowered, how are you as a person who's often been an only, as I have been, this is sort of a women in leadership, you talk mm-hmm. about it in the book, how do we avoid scarcity mentality, thinking mm-hmm. I can only be the only one. But when you are the only one, where have been places that you've been able to grow and experience feedback?
Yeah.
Because if the feedback you're getting is sometimes about the fact that, like you said, you're Black, tall, and friendly.
Yeah.
How do you balance that with actual feedback that helps you grow?
Yeah. I mean, I look in those environments where I'm the only, I look for the people who are the most welcoming mm-hmm. and the teams that are most welcoming. And in those, I invite feedback. I say, so how'd it go? Is there anything you'd do differently? And all of that. Because I think feedback is a healthy thing to have. So that's one thing in those environments. I look to build bridges and build relationships all the time. And some you build as much as that event, and others you build beyond that. But then I also I'm very proactive in looking for other onlys. You know, mm-hmm. there have been years where I'd start the year and say, okay, who am I going to get to know this year? And I would literally just turn up in their Facebook, turn up in their Instagram and say, hey, you're doing the same things I'm doing. Let's get to know each other, et cetera, et cetera. And not everybody picks you up in the offer because people are busy and people have lives. And so I'm not anticipating that there's going to be 100% return on that question. And there doesn't have to be. I've realized for me that when you see another unicorn from afar, you know that they've had unicorn issues too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you see another unicorn, it's like, oh, did you accidentally stab someone when you didn't mean it, kind of thing? Or did someone else look at you funny and say, why have you got a horn on? Do you know what I mean? And all of that. There are certain assumptions you can make. So I've learned to be really proactive in getting to know people. And often that has been digitally, you know, at events, yes, where I can. But sometimes at events, everybody's just busy working and they're going in and out and all that kind of stuff. So it has often meant... saying, hey, can I have your number or email?
Yeah. I love how practical that is, because that's a practical expression of you living in power, because it actually takes power to extend mm-hmm. an invitation knowing that it might get rejected. Like, you have to have that confidence within to say, I'm going to assume that I'm a person worth getting to know. I'm going to assume this other unicorn across the room would want to have a relationship with me, while also holding, like you said, holding it loosely and not letting it define you. So I love that. Really, I think so many women can get stuck in that. I'm the only, that it actually becomes quite self-centered. They're always looking for someone to help rather than thinking, well, I can extend my own help because I have something to offer.
Absolutely. And I think I just got to a point of when you're that bored of being that lonely, you have to do something. Do you know what I mean? You've got to proactively do something. And because in this world where there is that level of scarcity, either I'm waiting for someone else to be generous, or I'm going to start infiltrating the culture with generosity. And creating cultures of generosity. And I'm not saying I've got much to offer more than friendship necessarily, but you don't know that until you get to know somebody, whether there is something you've got to offer. And we know that extended loneliness is not healthy for us, that chronic loneliness actually impacts mm-hmm. us and ultimately impacts our leadership. So for all of those reasons, I think it just propels me to start thinking beyond.
I love that. I love that. So one more thought on sort of how you might know. And I think, of course, you're sparking all these thoughts. I love that you have a coaching community. I love, I sort of was picturing as you were describing what it feels like to live a lie. Like there's a listener that's listening right now who just had a cold sweat come over her because she realized she's in that situation. Mm-hmm. And she's probably like, oh gosh, if I start to address this, what am I going to do? So lots of ways to connect with you. It'll all be in the show notes. But has there been a time for you where the disempowerment caused you to have to change course? And how did you know that the time was right for that?
Oh yeah, there have been lots of times.
Isn't it funny how we laugh when we think of something really painful? We're like, oh yeah, it was horrible. Let's laugh about it.
And then you just kind of rock gently or something. I think it's come about in different ways. I think sometimes there have been no job opportunities. So there have been times when, sorry, I don't know if you can hear my dog barking in the background and no, just doing his thing. It's probably a squirrel walking by with an acorn that he wants and... And
it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. It's a whole life.
Can't even lead your dog. It's very humbling as a leader.
No, it's just like great. No, oh, definitely can't lead the dog. He is his own ecosystem. I think there have been times, and there's been times in different ways. There have been times when I've been welcome, but not given opportunity. And so then are you really welcome? And you know, it's not always realistic to leave something straight away because you've got bills and environments and places you live in. Or there's been welcome, but can you do something for free? And it's like, I actually can't. I can choose what I can do for free, but I've got to choose that. You actually can't extendedly choose that on my behalf. Kind of thing. That's not how this works.
That is so familiar. That's why I'm laughing.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, that too. And so in those moments, the walking away has just been a boundary of things that I will consistently say no to. I remember hearing someone say, you know, I don't want to be in a place where I'm tolerated. I want to be in a place where I'm celebrated. And I think that's just a really important thing. There was a church environment a number of years ago, which was wonderful, but the church environment was wonderful, but there were some things behind the scenes amongst members of staff, which was not wonderful at all. And the healthiest thing to do was just to walk away. The healthiest thing was because there was a jealousy vibe. There was a competitive vibe. There was a slanderous vibe. And it was just, you know what? I can't stay here. I don't need to stay here because I'm not holding on to this as tightly as it seemed the others were. Mm. And I wasn't the only one. There were a number of us who left, including the senior pastor who we just thought, you know what? This will only be more divisive and only be more, this will not be great for the kingdom if this carries on like this. Mm. And so there are in my world now, because I'm often contracted to speak, when I'm offered things, sometimes that's the boundary line where sometimes I'll say, look, I'm not the right person for this. Mm. I'm just not the right person. Or someone will say something and they'll ask you, and obviously our world is changing now, so this will all look different in the years to come anyway. But when you know that the pay is not equitably distributed amongst the people who have been invited, it's like, I can't do that. There are times where, you know, there are spaces where if I can't be a commodity, because a calling is a calling, it's not a commodity. So, I've had different conversations with environments over the years. I remember there's this wonderful church who said, hey, we felt really challenged over the years that we've had not enough diversity in our lineup. And we really want to do that better. But we're asking you, and we have to be honest with you, you are the first. But we don't want to do this to use you. We don't want to do this to kind of pretend we've got it all right. But we feel we've got to start somewhere. And the fact that they said that at the very beginning was just such a powerful thing. And that they were sensitive and attuned to the thought of, oh my gosh, we are asking someone for the first time to come into this space because we're trying to get it right. And we don't know quite how to get it right. And we're doing various work, but we know we've got to start somewhere. And I just really appreciated the level of honesty and openness about that. And I'm like, well, of course I'll come. Because then you know you're partnering with somebody in a particular way.
And it's safe. I mean, it's amazing how humility makes environments more safe for exploration, for risk, for something new when you know you're walking into that.
That's so true. And it's been great to be in those environments. But I think now I got to a point pretty early on where I thought if I can't lead here, I probably shouldn't be here. And not that I have to be leading all the time. I don't mean that. But if this is an environment where women aren't invited and encouraged to lead, then this probably isn't going to be an environment where I'm going to thrive long term. And I don't want to be pushing against somebody who's already said where their stance is. I don't want to be there waiting to change them. I don't know that that's productive either. So it's been easier to walk away.
You seem, as I'm listening to you and I'm like nodding along and thinking, I mean, it just sounds, you make it sound so easy in the sense of like the conviction that you have around yes and no. How did you develop that strength of conviction to actually say no to things that you might kind of want to do, or you want the money, you know, you want the platform, you want that opportunity, but you know that it's not the right thing to do? Where does that come from for you?
I mean, I think some of it is time over time, just, let me go further back. Well, I grew up in the Methodist church, and there's a covenant prayer that they pray every year. And there's and the older version of it was, let me be exhorted for you or brought low for you, employed for you or laid aside for you. And I think it was this sense of whatever I'm doing, it's got to be for you. But also it gave me the sense that there are seasons when you had opportunity and seasons when you didn't. Mm. It just was what it was, because that wasn't the main thing. And I think I look back and I realize that prayer has informed my thinking more than I realized at the time. I think some of it was, it's exhausting trying to prove yourself. It's exhausting fighting. I shouldn't have to fight to be equal. Do you know? I mean, why am I fighting to be equal? I am equal because I'm made in the image of God. Why am I fighting to prove that I'm worthy? I'm already worthy because God's already called me worthy. Mm. And the irony was, the more God healed the broken pieces of my story, and the more I was aware of God affirming my call to lead, the less I felt I needed to prove something. It wasn't like God's called me, so you've got to let me in. It's like, God's called me. If you're not going to let me in, that's your choice. God will show me where to go or what to build.
Yeah. I found also that when you align yourself, that prayer, by the way, is beautiful. I haven't heard it before. Mm-hmm. And to think about how that's in your DNA and kind of rock bottom sort of sovereignty of God. The other thing is, as you become more sensitive, I've realized I will usually have a little check that I should have said no to something. Yeah. You go and do it. God redeems it, but it doesn't feel great.
Yeah.
And you come home and you're like, wow, I really don't want to do that again. Like, thank you for your grace, Lord, but I don't want to not listen to you again. So like, once you've done it multiple times where you're like, I shouldn't have done that. And I did it anyway. And God is gracious and good. And I think even uses those things, but it's so, like you said, it's so exhausting that you come back and you're like, that's really probably not worth it. But I think there's some freedom in knowing that when you mess up, or when you say yes to something you should say no to, or vice versa, God's there sort of redeeming and instructing and correcting if you're sensitive to the listening for that.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think, you know, there's one other thing that I was reminded of. I was reminded, there used to be a time when I used to say to women, like when women leaders used to say, you know, I'm called there to change the organization and all that kind of stuff. And about 5 years in, I watched those women burnt out and bitter, just burnt out and disappointed and frustrated and broken, and then broken relationships as well because of the trying so hard. And I'm just like, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Because your call was your call. Was your call to change people who weren't ever going to change? Because they'd already said where they stood. They'd already made it. Now, sometimes some environments don't make it clear. And then you go on the journey. But for the places where it's clear, it's like, eh. I made a decision at that point that I thought, I'm not going to try and persuade someone who's already decided what they think. It's easier to bless them and go. And I'm not saying it's not easier necessarily in the outworking of how you work out what to do next, but it's easier on the legacy on your heart. Yeah. And I'm not going to convert my calling into trying to persuade somebody to think a certain thing. That's not what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. I'm not the help. Do you know what I mean? I'm not there. To be honest, I have said that to a leader or two in past times. That might.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. That's why I like you so much.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not here to help you understand what it's like for Black women or what it's like for women in leadership. I'm not here to be your test thing. I'm called for a kingdom work just like you are. And we can all work that out as we do it together. But I couldn't, I watched these women who put themselves in positions where they were just so vulnerable and so broken, and it took them years to recover. Just years. And I think that's why it's, for me, it's been easier to make the no sooner, because then I'm still friends with people who I don't have the same worldviews on, but it doesn't cost me anything because I'm not trying to change their world.
Right. Right. And there, it's probably easier for you to interact with them too. Like, yeah. I mean, oh, for them to interact with you, you know, and who knows how God might use that? Who knows how your words, you know, this is a beautiful thing about coaching communities and books is you start to reach people that you don't even know you're necessarily reaching. You might be reaching someone's dad or husband or brother, or, you know, some woman who's going to plant a beautiful church in the next generation or hopefully in this one, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's incredible. So helpful. Mm-hmm. So in our time, I always like to, when we have a guest, ask for a little personal coaching, because I think it helps our listeners all understand, like, we're all learning and we're all growing. So, you know, because we've talked about it. Oh, let me fix my camera. It's off.
I was going to say, I was like, you disappeared into the void.
It's so, this is like one of those things. That
worked. It did. And then it went, oh, you're back. You're back.
It worked. It worked. I just had to hit button. Okay. So I always like to do a little like mini coaching as this podcast is really around real problems, sticky situations, tricky questions. And I was thinking, oh man, if I have Joe's ear for 5 minutes, here's what I want to ask. So I've watched you, admired you. I know that you've pivoted in multiple seasons through different leadership opportunities. And I feel like I'm in a new season right now, and I'm feeling all of this, like, oh man, what if this fails? Like, all of these different kind of dynamics are coming up. So I'd love to ask you, what is it that you look out for in yourself or in your clients when they're entering into new seasons? What are some of the important sort of signposts along the way to keep yourself moving towards your calling, persevering?
Yeah. I, because transitions are vulnerable and pivots are vulnerable, I like to pay attention to what the wounds are. Because, and any vices that are growing up in response to the wounds as coping mechanisms for the wounds, because those things will take us out. Do you know, do you know what I mean? I mean, it'd be terrible. There you are with these great gifts, this new vision, this new energy, and you run, and then you're like, when? Do you know what I mean? Pulled back by the thing that you didn't resolve. Because, and what does it look like to resolve with, like, to make your peace with the previous season? And it's not that everything is neatly tied in a bow, but are you doing the grief work that needs to happen and the surrender that needs to happen in that, the kind of the letting go? What does it look like to leave things at the foot of the cross, to leave people, to leave the last word at the foot of the cross, the things you wish you'd said, if I knew what I knew then I'd say that, because we have a finite amount of energy. We either run forward or we, do you know what I mean? We can't keep on being emotionally consumed by those things. So I ask about that. When I'm thinking of pivoting and moving forward, I was thinking about this the other day and looking back, and I thought, I always come back to some key relationships, not always the same ones, but who are the people you're connecting with right now?
Mm-hmm.
And who are the relationships? What are the relationships you're building? And I think I have a great friend of mine who's a corporate woman in Minneapolis, and she dedicates like 30% of her time to networking every week.
Wow.
30%. And that networking is next generation, peers, and people above her. And I just thought that, I think that is something that we need to, and we're pivoting. Who are you building relationships with? And I'm not saying every relationship will lead to opportunities. Mm-hmm. It might be the relationship you make through that person. It might just, but we're finite human beings. We don't see the 360, but other people do. So if you're building those relationships and checking in, and if you've exhausted the environment you're in, you need new environments to be able to get to know other people and find out what and who is out there. So that'd be the other piece. I would ask, what things do we need to learn for a new environment?
Mm-hmm.
Because what got you here isn't going to get you there. So we've got to be aware of that. And I think the last thing I would ask is just, in some ways, what are the dreams? You know, like that thing I said at the beginning, like, the call is the same, but the vehicle is different.
Sure.
So it's like you need to, it's worth checking in with those dreams again and saying, okay, what is my dream, a vehicle or is it a call? Do you know what I mean? And how do I break that down again? And if your dream has become a vehicle, that doesn't mean that doesn't negate the call on it. It just means you may need to recalibrate it in your heart and mind.
Yeah.
And stuff. So I think those are some of the things. If I think it's important to be practical. And intentional in the relational piece and just in our own well-being to give us the energy to pursue things.
That is incredible. And I think about the people that I'm coaching right now who are also in those pivot seasons. And like you said, that unresolved spaces of loss or wound, they just can sort of roll over you like it when you least expect it. So even creating the expectation that that's part of the experience. I remember I was with a mutual friend of ours who said, a year, like you need a year before you can really process all of it. And just even the freedom to say, it's okay that it takes a while to uncover or sort of redeem or, you know, move through. Mm-hmm. You don't want to stay stuck back there. You can actually be moving forward.
Yeah.
But be aware when you get pulled over to the side of the road in your emotions or in a moment and be like, okay, so what is this telling me? Like, why is this thing? Why was this moment so hard? Why, you know, because it didn't have anything to do with the moment I was in. It probably had something to do with the moment I had before.
So good.
Yeah.
And so true.
Well, thank you, Joe. Anything else that you want to share before we wrap up our time together?
I think I just want to encourage everybody, because we're in this unknown, it is immobilizing and we do feel out of our depth. And we are hit by these feelings and these responsibilities. But I want to encourage everybody to, even if it, I mean, it may sound kind of particularly self-helpy, but I'm fine with that. But I do think it's worth us taking a moment every day to breathe or something. Because it's so thick and fast, you may not feel like there's a way through. But if you can take a moment just to like to take a deep breath, and I say that, you know, there are some of us with young kids where that moment is locked in the bathroom while the kid is knocking on the door saying, come and play or whatever, or I need food, or that the dog just pooped. And that, so I know we're not talking from a place of comfort here, but we'll need strength as we move into a new era. So what are the things that you can do that can help you even think of what you need to be strong? So I'm not even saying write a list of what you need to be strong. I'm saying take a breath, because that'll give you some capacity that maybe on a later date you can think of what you need for the next emerging era of your life. And I think I would say, although everybody may, you may look around and see everybody running fast, none of us know what we're doing. None of us.
Absolutely.
We just know to move. That's it.
And I think too, you're probably accomplishing less in a day and more in this month than you thought you could. And even if that accomplishing looks like,
that is so good.
I've been realizing, oh my gosh, I've been able, now I have older kids like you do, so it's not quite the same, but I've been able to actually know what amount of sleep I need. Like maybe for the first time in my adult life, because I don't have to get up with an alarm. I'm not having like something really early in the morning. So I'm like, oh, like this is how much sleep I need. That's actually a wonderful thing to learn. So there's a lot of things in this month or the 2 months or 3 months, however long this particular part of this really life-changing experience we're in, that you can learn. You're not going to learn them in a day, but you're probably learning more, accomplishing more, and doing more holistically in a month.
That's so
than
good.
You probably think you have. So
that's a great word, because to be able to reflect on a month is so, it just, it, there's some grace for us in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe, thank you. You can go to our show notes to grab Joe's book, which is fantastic. You can find out more about her coaching community, which is open, so you can go check her out. Joe, thank you. You've blessed me. I know that you have encouraged our listeners. And man, I love just watching you fly. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so good of you.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Be Real with Nicole Eunice. We'd love to hear from you. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? Send us an email or a voice memo to nicole@nicoleeunice.com and we may feature you on the show. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.